Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Va Montiel! Montiel va! No!
That is the sound of Argentina becoming campeones del mundo. Welcome to the La Liga Lowdown podcast. My name is Ruri Barlow. I'm your host. I'm joined by Román de Arquer after we've watched a thrilling final. If you don't know the result, I don't know where you've been or what you've been doing, but you're absolutely mad. Lionel Messi lifting the World Cup after a 3-0 draw after extra time. They then win it on penalties. Again, Dibu Martinez coming up massive. Some people are calling this the greatest ever World Cup final, Román.
I mean, that's a big call, but it was definitely a very, very exciting final. I mean, it felt like the game was pretty much over at halftime, you know, because Argentina dominated the game. I don't think France barely got close to their opponent's goal. They were really, really dull, really poor. And I mean, of course, what happened in the last 15-20 minutes changed the game completely. It was a big surprise, but I mean, I can understand why those are calling it one of the best finals ever, because it had a bit of everything, you know. It had the extra time, the penalties, the excitement of going up, going drawing late on. It had everything, so it was definitely a super great final to have and to watch.
Yeah, it's certainly the most thrilling that I can recall. It was really an incredible watch. And of course, I mean, we can't sort of skirt around it. Lionel Messi, obviously a man very close to many people's hearts, but particularly Barcelona fans. What was it like just watching him, and what does this mean for his legacy, his iconography? This was everything a fairy tale could have possibly dreamed for Lionel Messi.
It is. I mean, I honestly thought that there was so much pressure on him, on Argentina, that it was likely they would fail, especially after the beginning of the World Cup, where they lost 2-1 against Saudi Arabia. It felt like it was all an illusion, you know, that Argentina really had an opportunity. But then, little by little, they went improving game after game. And in this final, I mean, having Messi there, having scored in every knockout stage of the competition when before he never scored in any knockout stage of a World Cup was pretty impressive. And doing it in the final, you know, especially the second goal when he got that, it felt like that could be the winner. Messi could have, you know, maybe just done it for them, and then it was game over and he was going to lift the World Cup. But then, of course, France were very persistent. They got always back to the draw, to the level terms. And then, I mean, I was doubting, I was worried that he might not achieve it. But of course, even if he hadn't won it, for me, he would still be the best ever. I mean, he's won everything else. He's just incredible to watch. And still, seeing that he now won the World Cup, I mean, there's not really arguments against Messi now of not being the best ever, you know. I mean, it's hard to defend otherwise. And seeing how happy he was the moment after lifting the World Cup. The only thing I wasn't very happy about was him having to wear that thing they gave him at the end, because that iconic image that's going to last forever, you know, and it's going to be something people are going to see in 20, 30, 100, 200 years or whatever. It's going to be with this weird black thing, you know, black coat, whatever you want to call it. So that's a bit disappointing, honestly. But aside from that, it's lovely to see Messi finally win the World Cup. And if anyone had doubts, as I said, that he was the best, now I think you can't have a single complaint.
Yeah, I think the cape apparently is called a bisht. I know it's given to people out there as a kind of a sign of respect and a sign of success and wealth. And I understand that maybe that's a traditional thing in Qatar. I can't profess to be an expert on those customs, but my word, what a self-centered, egotistical, ridiculous gesture. As you say, this is an iconic image. This is a moment that Lionel Messi has dreamed of for his entire sort of like conscious life.
We've all dreamed of it, a lot of us, you know, and like having that image is just...
Yeah, and having them insert themselves into that moment. And even Infantino and the other guy next to him, I wasn't aware of who he was, but yeah, just making the moment all about themselves was disgraceful. But yeah, mini rant over. Back onto the game. This was going pretty well for Argentina. Lionel Scaloni, for about 70 minutes, I thought, got everything spot on, including starting Angel Di Maria. Then things started to go wrong. I probably wouldn't have put Marcos Acuña on left wing myself. But yeah, Argentina played very well for the majority of this match, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, it was really incredible to see how good they were on the field, seeing how the evolution has been where they started, as I said before, against Saudi Arabia, playing very poorly, or quite poorly. I mean, they had good moments, but they were easily dominated towards the second half in that first game of the competition. But then, little by little, you know, you could see that something was really cooking there. And in this game, I mean, they looked really strong, really solid at the back. They didn't concede barely anything against France, you know. I mean, Giroud, who's the top French scorer ever, against Mbappé, who in the end managed to break through, of course. I mean, France had Dembélé, that had great players in attack, you know, and in that first half, they were completely cancelled out. And then, of course, in the second half, Argentina came out pretty good as well, you know, they still looked a similar level. And of course, that substitution of Di Maria, maybe, as you said, wasn't ideal, even though I understand that Di Maria isn't maybe at its best level physically, or maybe Scaloni thought that the defensive move could kind of help and close down definitively the French players, because they were really struggling also in that second half, until finally, out of nowhere, you know, those two goals completely changed the game. But very impressive from Argentina, you know, they were playing really good football, and it felt like they deserved to win, even though it was going to be a bit of a boring game for some moments, for 60, 70 minutes. But then, of course, football is magical, and these unexpected things tend to happen, you know.
Yeah, surprised, impressed with how good they were, just in terms of sort of dominating the game, more or less. I think most people thought that even though Argentina had done very well and they'd made their way through the knockout stages, France were cut above what they'd faced so far, but they proved their quality against them. I remember about a week or 2 weeks after Kylian Mbappe decided to stay at PSG, there was a lot of Real Madrid think pieces about how they didn't need Mbappe, how the team was better off without the ego that Kylian Mbappe would have brought to this team. And Vinicius was on the left anyway, so there's probably, I mean, you could add him, but it wasn't necessarily the best thing for Real Madrid. And that's potentially still a valid opinion, but it seems quite hard to argue at it right now when he's on 13 World Cup goals at the age of, what, 23?
It is. I mean, Mbappe is top class. I mean, there's no doubt about that. He almost won his second World Cup with that age, so that would have even been more incredible. But there's no doubt that he's the kind of player, you know, that's going to step up and is going to lead teams to win titles. And he's almost done it again in the World Cup. And he's going to do it in the future with PSG, with Madrid, or whichever team he goes. And in the future, France are always going to be, you know, or most likely going to be contenders for the next few Euro and World Cups coming up. Because with him in front, anything can happen. These differential players are key in these competitions. Like, for example, Spain doesn't have an Mbappe, you know, up front, doesn't have a Messi, doesn't have a top quality striker that can lead the team forward. And they really felt that in these last few competitions they've played since we were so successful. So of course that's going to be really helpful in them. I mean, Mbappe is world class, and Madrid are going to really want to hope that they can finally sign him, which seems likely, I guess, unfortunately for us Barca fans. But I mean, it's the best, I guess, for La Liga to have a player like him join the competition, take into account the Messi and Ronaldo era is over. or the Messi era, maybe not so over. We'll see about that. But yeah, Mbappe is a fantastic player.
Yeah, it was a remarkable performance from him. I think it might have been Gary Lineker in the UK who was saying that he was pleased that both Messi and Mbappe scored, so that both of them sort of had their moment in a sense, and there wasn't this sort of narrative about bottling or sort of blame game as to who didn't show up in this game, because both definitely did show up and exhibited their class. It wasn't a great night for the rest of La Liga's representatives on the French side. Dembélé, of course, hooked after 40 minutes. Koundé really struggled to get to grips with Di Maria, as you're saying. And then Antoine Griezmann as well, hooked after about 60, 70 minutes, which I was astounded at, I have to say. Even if Deschamps can say that he got it right because he got them back into the game, I was still blown away by that. And Camavinga as well, I thought he was decent enough when he came on. But yeah, this was concerning, and I think Xavi will have to again have another chat with Dembélé when he gets back and try and work on some things.
I really hope it doesn't come to that. I mean, it's true that Dembélé hasn't had a great competition overall, although he was important for Deschamps. I mean, he was starting, I think, every game. So, I mean, he definitely had his trust, and he's going to have Xavi's trust when he comes back. But it was unfortunate for him to be part of that first goal from Argentina with the penalty, of course. And you could tell that he wasn't really as electric as you'd want Mbappe to be. And then similarly to Griezmann, whom for many he was going to be one of the best or the best player of the competition, Messi aside, of course, after winning it. But, you know, a lot of people were saying that Griezmann was really a different player compared to one we've been seeing in past few years with Barca or even Atleti, where he has improved. But still, with France, it seems like he's just another step over or above that. So, I mean, it was quite surprising to see him not playing maybe at his best level. But I think it's also credit to Argentina, you know, because tactically also I think they were the better side, and they managed to kind of cancel out all these important players who really struggled to have their moments in the match. But yeah, I mean, France in the end, despite, for me they're kind of like the Real Madrid in terms of nations, you know, when they play football, because they have that capacity to score goals at any time, even though they're not playing their best on the pitch, and that's kind of what happened. It was reflected again in this game, similarly against Morocco, for example, where Morocco had really good chances. They played really good football, and you know, France got an early goal out of nowhere, and they got the other goal, and they kind of ended the game with that, you know. So France have this capacity because they have these quality players, such as the ones we've been mentioning, the ones we have in La Liga. But it is true that these two in this case weren't that good. Whereas Tchouaméni, I think, had a decent match, and Camavinga, when he came on, I think he was a breath of fresh air for France in that match. So 50-50, I guess, for the Spanish La Liga players, we could say, in this case, from France.
Yeah, on the opposite side, I thought, Molina had a relatively decent game up until kind of the last 20 minutes that he was on. Rodrigo de Paul, what on earth has happened to this player? Because even in that first game against Saudi Arabia, he was the Atleti player that we've seen for the last kind of 6-7 months or so. And then yeah, just ran forever. Him and Enzo Fernandez in midfield were just incredible, like really impressive stuff at such a high level. And I think for me, that was perhaps the part of the sort of continued narrative of this Argentina side, because we saw last, sort of in the Copa America when Argentina won that, we saw that Messi was brilliant. He got them to the final, essentially dragged them through some games. He hit incredible. And again, that was the case this time round. But in that Copa America final, it was a De Paul ball to a Di Maria sort of finish over the keeper against Brazil. This time, Dibu Martinez, who stepped up in those games in the Copa America, again, massive. Di Maria, massive. De Paul, huge. And I think the fact that they finally managed to step up and sort of put this into the sort of realm of being achievable for Messi, that's part of this Argentina story. But yeah, food for thought for Diego Simeone, who I think has to try and get some of these performances. Because like you say, Griezmann, one of the players of the tournament. Molina, very good. I think he dealt with pretty much everything that was thrown at him to an extent. And De Paul, again, one of the players of the tournament. Maybe not quite in that sort of top echelon, but he's around there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the mentality, the ambition is completely different with the Argentinian national team than it is with Atletico Madrid, you know, in the end. I think it's really, there's really like a united squad there. They were all for one in Argentina. They were even celebrating while they were getting to the stadium before the final on the bus. You know, they were singing and jumping. They were already like hyped up, excited. You could see that it's a family. You know, it's very different to what we're maybe seeing at Atletico, where, for example, João Félix, you know, is not happy with what's happening, and Simeone either. They're like, kind of mad at each other. So I mean, the atmosphere is completely different, and I think this has allowed the players to improve, and that's why I say it's a mental thing rather than in terms of quality or physically, you know, because if the players feel like in their minds that they can win the game, that they can actually achieve things, it completely changes how they perform, and this is a clear example with those Atletico players.
Yeah, and credit to Lionel Scaloni for building that family and for I can't think of the word, constructing that unity. But yeah, we'll wrap up part one now, and we'll come on to sort of some of the stuff more domestically in Spain. Any final thoughts, a final pronouncement on Argentina, Messi, the World Cup as a whole? Sum it up for us, Roman.
Well, I mean, as I said before, seeing Messi is just a beautiful image. I mean, I think people all over the world were supporting Argentina, mainly because of Messi, I'd say, practically, because he's such an icon, he's a figure, he's such a talented player, and also a loved player, I think, you know, because the way he is, he's the kind of guy who gets into trouble, you know, and he's easy to like and love, and to see him finally achieve the World Cup was just special, because he's won Champions League, he's won leagues, he's won everything you can imagine. He has all the titles, such, I don't know how many golden boots, I can't even remember now, and all the Ballon d'Ors and everything you can imagine, and it was the World Cup he was just missing, you know, and finally seeing in his hands that golden, beautiful trophy was incredible. So especially happy for him, and of course for Argentinians all around the world who are just different, you know, when it comes to football, they have some sort of passion that it feels like nobody else can achieve, or no other nation seems to understand or have, you know, so that's also incredible, and happy for them.
Yes, it was pretty heartwarming, it has to be said. But with that, we will end part one, and we'll be back in 2 minutes with part two, and we'll get on to some of the stuff happening in Spain.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the La Liga Lowdown podcast. We've just sort of taken a final note of the World Cup and taken stock of what was an exhausting 3 hours in that World Cup final, but an incredible tournament. It feels silly, it feels kind of ridiculous, because normally we get about a 6-week break until we get meaningful football after the World Cup, but We have just about 48 hours or so. On Tuesday evening, we will be back in action in Spain. The Copa del Rey starts. I mean, it is an earlier round and there's sort of seeded ties. We don't have any of the four Spanish Super Cup teams competing in it, just, but there are some interesting ones in there. In particular for me, Sestao, River Club, Athletic Club. They're about, I think it's 20 kilometres away, even less than that, about 15 between the two stadiums. Is there any other kind of highlights that stick out for you in this Copa del Rey round?
Yeah, there are some interesting games here we should be interested in, I guess, watching, because of course it's, as you said, early stages of the competition. It's not any massive games, but you still have strong teams like Atletico Madrid, like Villarreal, Real Sociedad, etc., who still won. And of course, we did have disappointment, I guess, in the previous round with Almeria being maybe the highest profile team to get knocked out, that case against Arenteiro. But here, for example, it would be interesting to see games between second division teams, especially, I'd say, in my opinion, for example, with Oviedo against Granada or even Levante against Andorra. But then, as you said, the one you mentioned is also a pretty good one between Athletic and Sestao. And then to see other teams, you know, how they've evolved after this little preseason, like Villarreal, for example, who still have an easy fixture, but, you know, they've been able to get some games with Quique Setién as the manager, and, you know, and other teams that also have been able to get a few more extra minutes in their boots, which will definitely help when the season comes back at the end of the year.
Yeah, and Arenteiro are taking on Atletico Madrid, who have had quite, I mean, they went out to Real Sociedad last year, but they've had quite a record of cup sets in recent years, and going out to Cornellà the year before that was pretty embarrassing for Diego Simeone and Atleti. You mentioned Villarreal there. Of course, I was reading a fascinating story from Relevo, which was kind of blew my mind, where Quique Setién, apparently, when he came into the job, he mistook Jeremy Pino for a youth player and then referred to him as Yerai. This then, of course, I mean, we know that Setién didn't have a good start. I think this brought about quite a bit of laughter in the Villarreal squad. And then following that, Fernando Roig, the president of Villarreal, got a call from, well, he spoke to the sort of dressing room heavyweights. They mentioned that to him and ended up calling Quique Setién and saying, explaining to him, please call him Jeremy. And yeah, so that was kind of a part of this whole sort of narrative. As Setién was a bit kind of out of the loop. He was a bit out of touch. He wasn't kind of prepared for this job. You said that they've had kind of a bit of an improvement in this kind of mini pre-season that they've been doing. How do you see them faring, and do you have kind of faith in Setién to kind of turn it around?
Honestly, I've always liked Setién, despite what happened at Barca, and despite everything. I think he's a very valid manager, and honestly, I think Villarreal is a club that really fits his style. Of course, as you said, he's been away quite a while, and due to that, it seems like he wasn't aware of some current players in the squad and with the names and that kind of stuff, which of course is a very bad look if that's actually true. And it isn't great, and there was a lot of rumors where they were saying that maybe he'd be knocked out or kicked out, sorry, after that game against Espanyol if they lost or something like that, and they got a very tight 1-0 win, which seemed to have saved the spot. But honestly, I mean, you can't judge a manager after just, what it was, 4 or 5 games, I think it was. Taking into account two of those were in the European competition, the Conference League, where Villarreal were already qualified. They weren't important games. Of course, the sensations were great, especially after having Unai Emery, who took them all the way to the Europa League. But you need to give a manager time. And I think this World Cup was a perfect time and break for Quique Setién, you know, to try and get the players to understand his system, because of course he's also going to play a very different style of football. So I mean, it's a lot of things coming on. Also, Gerard Moreno was also injured when Quique Setién came on, except for the, I think the last game against Espanyol or something like that, where he had a few minutes. So I mean, all of this doesn't help. But now, as you were asking me before, that with this little preseason, it seems to be that they've looked sharper with every game. You know, they've had some good results against strong European sides, similar level we could say to Villarreal, like for example, of course, Napoles, Aston Villa, etc., where they've actually managed to win. Obviously, it's a friendly game, so we can't really take too many conclusions there, but that definitely helps a lot of these players to understand what Quique Setién wants. So I mean, this is going to be very good for him as a manager to be able to regain the trust of the fans, especially who are chanting for him to leave, which I thought was quite shocking, you know, seeing how he barely had any time to do anything. But I guess Villarreal fans are now very or expect a lot, because you know they've won a European competition and they want more, which I guess is part of the ambition of wanting to get more. So hopefully this will allow the fans to connect a bit more if, of course, he starts getting good results when the competition kicks off again.
Setien explains that to the president, saying that there was a guy called Yerai who used to work in the bar or the cafe that he used to go to every day when he was back home in Cantabria. And from there came the sort of mental lapse, the slip. But yeah, hopefully he can sort of turn it around and really put his own stamp on this Villarreal, because I think, yeah, Setien, for all his critics, I do think he's probably quite a likeable guy in person. And so I think if he can win over the Villarreal squad, then we could see a different Villarreal. But of course, that is probably the most tricky thing to do in management. Coming on to some more kind of situations, shall we say. Apparently, Isco has had a bust up with Monchi and is on his way out of the door. All's not well at Sevilla, and we kind of know that. I mean, they're sitting sort of, yeah, right at the bottom of the table, but this is a disastrous. I mean, he was their star signing in the summer, and this is Monchi again, who brought in Dolberg, who brought in Nianzu, who brought in Marcao. None of these signings have worked, and Isco, it could well be sort of the last that we see of him in La Liga, given he's what, sort of aging into his 30s now. If he goes away for 2-3 years, he might not come back.
Yeah, I was actually very excited to see Isco in Sevilla this season. It's a player that I've always loved, especially from his times at Malaga. It was just incredible to see how much talent he had at such a young age. And of course, in Madrid, he had his ups and downs. But leaving, I thought, would be good for him, especially leaving with Lopetegui, who wanted him. You know, it was also part of the reason why Isco went to Sevilla, because he was there. And of course, having fired Lopetegui, I think that changed a lot of the situation for Isco, where maybe he doesn't have Sampaoli's full confidence, I guess, or something isn't as he'd expected it to be, and now he's unhappy and he's very likely leaving. And it's disappointing because, of course, Isco arrived to Sevilla, I think, in very complicated circumstances, because as we know, the club isn't doing well. It's near the bottom of the table. It's been struggling all season so far. Results haven't been there, so that doesn't allow you maybe to adapt the best way. But now, I mean, I don't know. I wish he could stay a bit longer and Sevilla could improve with Isco. But if he has to leave and he thinks there's better opportunities outside, then, I mean, he has to leave. I don't know if maybe Papu Gomez and Montiel can bring some of that those winning vibes back to Sevilla when they come from the World Cup. But yeah, I mean, it's a pity, because Isco has tons and tons of talent. It's bags of talent. You know, he's a fantastic player. Obviously, he's not the guy he used to be, but he's still got the quality, and I think he can still be important for a team like Sevilla if they find a way to integrate him well. But yeah, Sevilla's going through a tough time, and I guess Isco maybe doesn't want any of that.
Yeah, no, I think the situation of the club probably doesn't help matters there. It makes everything a little bit more tense. And just finally, very quickly, I mean, Joao Felix, the Atleti CEO, has come out and said that he's asked to leave and it wasn't their idea to sell, but if he wants to leave, then they won't make him stay. Do you see him going in January? I mean, there's rumours of Matias Cunha also exiting. It seems like this is a bit of a watershed moment for Atleti, and they're maybe trying to start again. But yeah, a deal in January for Joao Felix, or is he staying till the summer?
I honestly think he won't leave this summer. I mean, there's been rumours for so many like transfer market windows where Joao Felix might leave if the other club paid, I don't know, 100 million or more than Atleti had already paid Benfica. So, I mean, take into account, they're probably going to ask a very big chunk of money. I don't think it's going to happen in this transfer market. I don't see any team coming with all that cash, you know, and allowing him to go. And I don't see Atletico letting him go, take into account that the season isn't over. You know, there's still a lot to do, and they need the quality that Joao Felix can provide, even though Simeone isn't very happy. But I mean, before the World Cup, the last two games, you know, Joao Felix was being quite important for the team. He was coming on and getting goals. So I mean, he's a key player to have, especially if you're going to sell Marcos Cunha and other strikers. So I mean, they need Joao Felix, and I don't think any big offers are coming now. So yeah, definitely, I think it'll be the summer when he leaves. And I think he will leave finally, because it's unsustainable. You know, it's been going on for too long. They expected too much out of Joao, which I understand, because they paid a lot of money, but it's never really clicking with him. He needs to play somewhere else, I feel like.
Yeah, I think Antoine Griezmann is going to have the keys back when he returns from the World Cup to Atleti. But with that, I think we will wrap up. We've had some really good, interesting thoughts, and I think it was just it was fun to break down that World Cup final because it was so exciting. But yeah, thank you very much for your time, Roman. And we'll be back again before La Liga starts. We'll have a sort of a roundup podcast of just kind of refresh everyone's minds as to where we are. So keep an eye out for that. And also make sure you're at llonline.substack.com because we'll have plenty of good content on there in the coming days. We're sending out daily articles at the moment. So make sure you don't miss all of the good content that's going up on there. But with that, I will bid you goodbye and I will bid you a happy night, week, month, celebrating if you're an Argentine. Enjoy the celebrations.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.